Nice to have everyone back with us as we celebrate a little bit of the part of baseball that I really enjoy, and that is bringing an author on, looking at some of the baseball books that are out. And, of course, we've got plenty of time now to read things that are coming out on the market. And it's a great time of year to celebrate baseball through the literary sense. And I'm very happy to bring back Mitchell Nathanson. Now, Mitchell was with us last year, and he wrote a tremendous book. It was called God Almighty Himself, The Life and Legacy of Dick Allen. And Mitchell's been with us before, but his new book is on Jim Boughton, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But let me tell you a little bit about Mitchell, refresh your memory. Professor of Law in the Jeffrey S. Morad Center for the Study of Sports Law at Villanova University School of Law. He's the author of the Dick Allen book that I mentioned, A People's History of Baseball and the Fall of the 1977 Phillies, How a Baseball Team's Collapse Sank a City Spirit. Mitchell, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Very good. We're, you know, as we wait this thing out, I just hope you're safe and healthy. And I know you're back east, as we'll see where everything's going to go. But baseball, still a big part of our life. And as I said in the introduction, the literary part, maybe even a bigger part now, to bring us sort of within the mainstream of baseball again. And you've got a new book out. It's called Boughton, The Life of a Baseball Original. And for fans who don't know, it's about Jim Boughton, a very, very famous literary figure, baseball figure, and just a man of the world in baseball. And Mitchell, tell us a little bit about the book and why you were interested in it. And we'll go through a little bit of what this book is all about, because it's an outstanding, outstanding history of baseball in the 60s, the change in the literary aspect of baseball in the 60s, and also the life of Jim Boughton, a very interesting man. So go ahead. Tell us how this came about.
Well, it's interesting that the book is being released now. In that we're in the middle of a you know, obviously a weird time. But I first became enamored with Boughton at another time when we didn't have baseball, and that was 1981, when there was the baseball strike. And I took that time to read Ball 4 for the first time. I was 15 when I read that, and I fell in love with it. And ever since I fell in love with that book at the age of 15, I've always been an admirer of Jim Boughton. Now, his career was over by that point. I do have a memory of him pitching for the Braves in 78. But I just thought that that book was the closest I was ever going to get to being in a major league locker room as a ball player. And that just fascinated me that somebody was able to write like that and to bring me that close. So ever since then, I've been interested in Boughton, and I wrote the book about Allen, who's certainly an iconoclast. And if you're looking to up your game after writing about one iconoclast, you got to find someone who's a bigger iconoclast. And I think the only one who might be bigger than Allen is Boughton. So that's how I ended up with Boughton.
All right. Very good. Just so we give a little bit of background here. Of course, Jim Boughton pitched for the Yankees. And I remember him pitching. He was on the World Series team in 62 against the Giants, although he never made an appearance. But 63 and 4, he was a huge part of the Yankees, a 20-game winner. Of course, 63, he loses a game in the World Series to the Dodgers in the sweep by the Dodgers. In 64, pitches outstanding ball against the Cardinals, where the Yankees win that World Series. But what he's known for, really, is Ball 4. And a lot of people, of course, Mitchell, this is 50 years ago that Ball 4 was published. It's about a sort of a diary of the 1969 season, where Boughton was a Seattle Pilot, as well as a Houston Astro, with a lot of interesting people. But Ball 4 was a breakthrough book in those days, because literature and baseball was changing. We had, when I grew up in the 50s, players were put on the pedestal and we protected them. But by the end of the 60s, with Vietnam and all the things that were happening in the world, we had writers who sort of delved into the personal life of ball players. And Boughton went into the clubhouse and took notes on his 69 season and published this book he wrote called Ball 4, and it set the baseball world on its ear. And that's the book you're talking about.
Right, right. And it's interesting that so many things came together at that period of time. Like you said, everything is changing in terms of baseball and literature. The book was a great book, but it was also a book of its time. It came about at a time when people were willing to read something like that. The number one book on the New York Times fiction list when this book came out was Philip Roth's Portnoy's Complaint. So, the era of glossed over tales was ending in fiction and nonfiction. And so Balfour fit right into that. And Balfour was the Portnoy's Complaint of nonfiction, I think, in that it really told the story, all warts and all, as it really happened. And what it does is it brings fans into the real world of the Major League Baseball player as it really exists and not as it was portrayed prior to that point, particularly in the 40s and the 50s, when it was really kind of cleaned up and sanitized. Balfour really is sort of the culmination of a changing era in sports writing, where you had new sports writers coming in who were more interested in what was going on in these players' lives and what are some interesting stories that surround the players and what's the real truth here. And those types of writing, that type of writing became more and more popular. And Balfour is really all of that writing times 10.
It really, well, I remember it, and of course couldn't wait to read it. It set the baseball world on its ear, including Bowie Kuhn, who was the commissioner who took great umbrage at the fact that Boughton wrote about what was going on in the clubhouse and teammates. But your book is interesting. It's Boughton, the life of a baseball original. So why Jim Boughton? Why was he the guy to do this in 1969? What was it about him as you delve into his story in your book?
Well, the interesting thing about Boughton was that he was an iconoclast before Balfour came out. I think a lot of people think, oh, Jim Boughton, Balfour. Balfour made Jim Boughton, Jim Boughton. But it's actually the opposite. Boughton was a guy who, as the 60s progressed, started to align himself more with this newer generation of sports writers than many of his teammates did. Many of his teammates were afraid of these guys, particularly a man named Len Schechter, who was his editor on the book, who was a columnist for the New York Post. A lot of the players would run into the shower when Len Schechter would show up, but Boughton befriended him. And because Boughton was not afraid of these guys, and actually he was willing to speak to them, and they wrote a lot about him, he became more aligned with them than he was with his own teammates. The interesting thing about him was that as he became more of an insider in sort of the writing world, he became more of an outsider with his own teammates, who viewed him as a spy. They viewed him as the other. And so why Jim Boughton? I think because Jim Boughton saw himself less as an insider. By the time we get to really 1967, 68, let alone 1969, when he's keeping his diary for Balfour, most players, I think, felt they had too much to lose to write critically about the game. Boughton was at the end of the line. He didn't feel that he had that much to lose. But more importantly, Boughton had an eye and an ear for what was going on that most players just didn't have. Boughton had perspective, and most players don't have that perspective. They're in the moment. But Boughton really saw things with a wider lens, and that's what enabled him to really take in all that he was able to take in and then put down in Balfour.
Well, you really capture him in your book, and you explain a lot of the things about Balfour. So the audience gets a feel for Boughton, and that background really helps us to understand who Boughton was. He was a political person as well. He protested against apartheid and South Africa being in the 68 Olympics, if I'm not mistaken, at that time. He was a political person. Now, he was ostracized by baseball and his teammates. What were some of the things in this book that were so revolutionary that Boughton, as you said, had the perspective, had the wide lens? What were some of the things that came out in Balfour that showed you that Boughton didn't really care? what the reaction was going to be within baseball, because he wanted this actual literary story to be accurately told. What was in there?
So he really focused on a lot of things, but I think the things that got him A, the notoriety, and B, got him the publicity that he ended up getting, were a lot of the things that showed up in an excerpt in Look magazine, which preceded the publication of the book. It's interesting, you know, we think about Ball 4 as this huge bestseller. I think it's sold more than 5 million copies so far. But that at the time, that was not a – nobody was looking at a book for – looking for a book from a guy pitching for an expansion team in the upper Northwest. This was not a book anybody was looking for. And so really, to promote the book, Boughton and Schechter put out this excerpt where they focused on – things such as Mickey Mantle being drunk in the locker room and hitting a home run, Whitey Ford and Elston Howard, who was his catcher, doctoring the baseball to help Whitey Ford make it through his last couple of seasons, players taking pep pills in the locker room, things like that, things that just, you know, it's not that nobody knew them in baseball. Everybody knew what was going on if you covered a team or you played baseball. It's just nobody said it. Nobody wrote it. And the fact that it showed up, first of all, in this, it, at the time, was a huge magazine, and then in the book itself, was just groundbreaking, and it was like a bomb went off. People saw Mickey Mantle as a hero who got up and drank milk in the morning and ate his spinach before the ball game and hit home runs. And the picture that Bound painted of him was of a fallible human being who had many different sides to him, and that was explosive.
So what happened to Boughton, as you tell the Boughton story in this book and really delve into the man and the sort of the background of Ball 4 and some of the things, the reactions in the country and teammates? What was Boughton's afterlife like after Ball 4 came out? How did he deal with it, and what went on in his life that you could share with us?
Well, shortly after Ball 4 comes out, he gets released by the Houston Astros, where he was pitching at the time. I don't know if there's a cause and effect. He wasn't pitching very well at the time. Having this tell-all book come out probably didn't help him, but he probably wasn't going to last much longer anyway. But he, you know, just to show you the difference of economics between then and now, he was making more money from the book than he was playing baseball. So walking away from baseball in 1970 didn't cost him anything financially, unlike what it would be like today, of course. So that was different. He then became a sportscaster, and interestingly enough, I spoke to Keith Olbermann about Boughton the sportscaster, and Olbermann grew up in New York in the early 70s, and he told me he grew up watching Jim Boughton as a sportscaster in New York, and basically modeled his sports centers of the 90s with he and Dan Patrick after Jim Boughton's sportscasts of the 70s. When Boughton was irreverent, he would talk about the games, but then he would kind of veer away from the games. He wouldn't read the scores. He would talk about offbeat topics. He would bring the outside world into his sportscast, or sometimes he would just be silly. And that's Sports Center. That's the Sports Center of the 90s that became very popular. And Olbermann told me that he said, "Well, I've been ripping off Jim Boughton for 20 years now." You know, it's amazing that a guy who was revolutionary and groundbreaking in one way then became revolutionary and groundbreaking in another way. Which is, you know, and it's all the theme that runs, the thread that runs through that is that he's being Jim Boughton, and Jim Boughton is just a unique individual, and he puts his stamp on everything, and that's really what the book is about.
Very good. Mitchell Nathanson, boy, terrific book. It's called Boughton, The Life of a Baseball Original, and it does cover the baseball career of Jim Boughton, the literary career, the postscript, as Mitchell just talked about. And, of course, what he did later on in life. Mitchell, if there was one thing you learned about Boughton that you didn't know, and you said, wow, after interviewing him and the family and all the people that you interviewed, of course, he passed away this past summer, July of 2019. What was the one thing maybe you learned about Boughton that you didn't know that you could share with us?
I was surprised to learn how unsure of himself he was. I had always had this impression of him as just this kind of a very self-confident, wise guy. a person who was very comfortable in his own skin. That's certainly how he portrays himself, or he portrayed himself. But what I learned was there was a lot of insecurity there, and a lot of that insecurity is what drove him to be, to create that character. You know, he, as a ball player, his nickname was the Bulldog. And I learned that that was a creation of Jim Bouton, the kid, who was small. He was not a particularly great athlete, but who loves sports. And the way that he could compete was by creating this persona of the Bulldog, this persistent, never give up character that he would personify, and that would get him further than he could go otherwise. And he maintained that Bulldog persona as a ball player, as a broadcaster. It's kind of the reason why he had trouble walking away from baseball in the 70s. He continued to play amateur ball and semi-pro ball and made a comeback. And a lot of that was because he had trouble seeing himself as anything other than that persona. And that was really surprising to me, that a guy who could project such a self-assured character was actually something very different underneath. And he eventually was able to reconcile with that, but it took a long time, and it certainly wasn't something I was expecting when I went into this.
Good insight, because it explains why he's the guy to ride ball for. He is the Bulldog, and he was the guy who was not afraid to go out and do it, and it became a huge, huge part of baseball history. Well, glad to have you on, Mitchell. The book is out by University of Nebraska Press. Of course, we have our book tree up in Montclair with David, our independent bookstores that we like to support. But I assume the book can be gotten. What is the publication date? When is it coming out?
The publication date is May 1st, although I think it's generally becoming more and more available as we speak. So I think it's probably available prior to May 1st, although I think May 1st is the official publication day.
All right. And all the usual spots that you could get it. But it's a lot of fun. It made me go back and get Ball 4 again to look at it after reading your book to refresh my memory. And now knowing more about Jim Bouton, and then you put it together with Ball 4 in the context of the time, you've tied together a lot of loose ends, which I think you accomplished with the book. He did pitch against the Giants in 1978 with the Braves, and he pitched against the Giants and the Dodgers and the Reds, all teams in the pennant race, and Ted Turner wanted him to pitch against all the contenders so nobody could complain, and he actually did beat the Giants, believe it or not. And I remember that before a few thousand people, if I'm not mistaken, an afternoon game at Candlestick Park. I think I remember that one.
Yeah, he pitched pretty well. I mean, he had one outing. He pitched not that well. But for the most part, yeah, he won that one game. And he actually pitched pretty well. I remember from that Giants game that Bill Madlock, I think, popped out or something, struck out, and was really angry after the game. I think he was embarrassed. I think that these guys thought that there's no way that this 38-year-old knuckleballer was going to get them out, and he did. And I think there was a lot of frustration and embarrassment invented in the Giants locker room after that game.
No, I remember. It was a big deal. It was a big deal. Mitchell, thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations. We enjoy having you on, and I enjoyed the Dick Allen book as well. So congratulations, and we'll catch up with you again. Be safe.
Thanks. You be safe as well. It was great to talk to you again.
All right. That's Mitchell Nathanson. The book is Bouton, Bouton, The Life of a Baseball Original. And he was an original, and you're going to enjoy this book. It's going to bring back a lot of interesting memories of that baseball season of 1969. All right. More coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5, The Sports Leader.